Grab a chip and a chair. It's time for the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL. 92.5 FM, brought to you by the Best Bet Poker Rooms at Jacksonville and Orange Park. Now, the Best Bet Poker Show pals.
Happy Hump Day!
Woo-hoo! Oh, yeah.
Hump Day!
You have to give another one, Dustin.
Oh, yeah. Two in a row.
Yeah. Welcome to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Dustin the Great.
That's right. Woo-hoo! We're missing one. We are missing one.
The boss man.
Something feels
today.
Weird.
It does feel a little bit strange. It's no longer a threesome. It is just you and I, sir. That is it tonight. So, but we got a great show for you. We're going to bring in a very special guest, Fausto Valdez, who is an incredible, extraordinary poker coach, I might say. He is the founder of Blueprint Poker Coaching. And the man is just incredible. He has come up through the ranks and he's got a great story, right? Like, he's one of those guys that didn't just sit down and step into playing poker with like $100,000 bankroll, or a guy who comes from having a whole bunch of money that's able to sit down and just take a shot at some of the biggest games, or some of the middle stakes games, right? This guy started as a grinder in the lowest stake games and came all the way up through the rankings to become a professional player, and no longer has a 9-to-5 job. So we get to talk with Fausto Valdez later in the show, and he's going to tell us kind of where he came from, talk about his poker coaching, what sets him aside, makes him different from other people. And I know, Dustin, that you have also had some coaching with him, so you get to speak from a standpoint of expertise and talk about his program and how it's improved your game.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to that. So he's going to take the boss man's place today as we come up in the second segment. Plus, we have some fun giveaways for you, as always. And and lots of things going on. So check this news story out. A nun pleads guilty to stealing $835,000 from a Catholic school to fund a gambling habit.
This is crazy.
Sister Mary Margaret Krupper was facing one count of wire fraud and one count of money laundering, right? 79 years old, she pleaded guilty yesterday as part of a deal with the prosecutors and the Central District of Columbia.
It's always funny to me when they just plead guilty and they just go, you know what? You got me. I give up. I have no recourse. You got me.
I mean, this might sound a little strange, and I'm not Catholic, but isn't this one of those spots where, like, you go to confession and you say, like, 10 Hail Marys or whatever it is?
Yeah. Does that get you off the hook for,
like,
the legal
side? Does it
get
you off the hook for the legal side?
Right,
or
right,
do you just, like...
I'm not guilty. I said my confessions.
Right. It's such a bizarre thing. So she was the school's principal for 28 years and ran the scam for 10 years during the period of 2008 and 2018. She retired in 2018.
This is wild.
Wild. And is now dealing with this. So she was in charge of all fundraising. She was in charge of scholarship money. She was in charge of all of these things for the St. James Catholic School. And she ended up embezzling $835,000.
So you and I have been around this industry long enough to know that, like, how far does $800,000 get you? Like,
not very far.
Right. So,
like, not
so
very
she
far.
She has to be winning, right? If she ran the scam for that long, she had to book a couple wins.
I mean, I don't have any idea. I'm just like, I always feel like it's strange when you see something that comes up with, you know, somebody scamming somebody else for money or running some form of a scam or something like that. But when you smash the Catholic school together with a nun and $835,000, I feel like that's a big story.
Hot topic.
That is a hot topic.
Hot topic right there.
Definitely a hot topic.
Sister Mary got him for 800K.
Yeah. Oh, poor Sister Mary.
Wow.
Do you think she needs to say those Hail Marys?
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like she does. Also, several sports book pay out even though a golfer was forced to withdraw with COVID. Did you hear about this?
Briefly.
So the PGA's Memorial Tournament this past weekend, John Rahm, he was in the third round. He was at 18 under par.
Wow.
He's walking off the 18th hole, and he gets stopped by the PGA tour director, whomever is out there, and they're like,
okay,
hey, John, as it turns out, you tested positive for COVID. You are now DQ'd from the tournament.
How do they let him get through 18 holes?
Exactly. So here's the thing, because I was not even saying, I'm like, how did he ever get out there and start playing?
Sure.
And evidently, he had been contact traced to somebody. He tested negative, continued to test negative during the early stages of the tournament, and whatever their rule was, like, have to test either every day or every 3 days or whatever that looks like.
Okay.
He gets into the tournament, he starts, and not only does he start, but the man is on fire, right? He's like, I think he's at a record on round 3 at being a 6-point lead over any other contender. So he's 18 under par, and the next closest person is 12 under par.
That's huge.
Which means it's almost effectively like he's going to win the tournament. So I'm like looking at it.
Just give him the trophy.
Right. I was looking at it, and yeah. I was like, well, can you just be like, well, if he part out every time, but you can't even do that. I mean, he has to withdraw, right? Because there's just no way to know what the outcome would be. But yeah, so he gets DQ'd from this round. I think this is one of the biggest things that has happened in golf. I mean, definitely in the history of my life. Maybe ever.
Yeah, I have very mixed feelings about it. Like, how do you let this guy get 18 holes into the best golf game of his life and then DQ him after the 18th hole?
Right.
After the 18th hole. He's already won. It doesn't matter.
Except there's another round to go, so it's not finished. Sure. But like for anybody to catch him at 6 under, I mean, he would have to throw in some serious bogeys for that to happen.
It'd be like a movie.
Yeah, it would definitely be like a movie.
Yeah.
So evidently, there were several sports books that agreed and decided to reward gamblers who placed their bets on Rahm, probably based on the fact that, he can't lose.
Right.
It's the right thing to do. Like, he wouldn't have lost if he would have hit par every hole. Like, he still would have won the tournament. Like, that's kind of what it looked like. But how do you feel for this guy who's having the game of his life? Right?
I have to commend the sports books on that one. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a pretty big move on them. Like, good for them for kind of doing that.
Yeah. DraftKings, shout out to DraftKings.
Yeah.
DraftKings Sportsbook was one of the first to announce that they would be grading all Rahm tickets as winners. Best bet.
Get a little ahead of ourselves.
Sportsbook. Sorry. the MGM also, bet MGM. And those are the two. So it looks like, those are the two biggest ones. FanDuel, PointsBet, William Hill, and Darren Rovell also paid out.
Wow.
Paid out those tickets for anybody that bet on him. So I thought that was good. I feel like that's some good graces. Like, that's smart.
It's a nice little, it still sucks for him. It's what a bad beat.
Yeah, I can't even imagine if you're the guy that's in the sporting
event.
That's
like a once-in-a-lifetime game.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
That's
just
a bad
give him,
spot.
Just give him the trophy, you know? But he gets DQ'd.
It is a weird spot, though, right? Because, like, if you think about that in terms of, we talk about poker being sportified, right? And poker is a sport. So you play a tournament, same type of thing. People come together, they enter. Sometimes you have to qualify to play in the tournament. But whatever that looks like, there is X number of players. You get X number of chips. And when you're out, you're out. And playing golf is similar. While you're not necessarily eliminated, you're eliminated by your stroke penalties. So if you're somebody who's getting all these ups on strokes, right, and you're 6 strokes ahead of the rest of the group, like, you kind
way
of feel like you
front.
Have it in the bag.
Yeah.
So to find out that you have COVID and you can't come back is pretty tough. But I guess it's sort of like the guy from the World Series, was it?
Yep.
Was it the World Series where they ended up finding a player who came back and was unable to come back and continue to play because he tested positive for COVID?
It's not even that he's 6 strokes ahead of the field. It's that he's 6 strokes ahead of the next closest guy. Like,
that guy could be
3 strokes ahead of the rest of the field, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he could end up being like 10, 12 strokes ahead of the pack.
Absolutely. I think there were 2 guys that were 12 under when he was 18 under.
Wow.
So, and then everybody else was either at least 7 or more shots behind.
Weird time to be a golfer.
Yeah, it makes it tough to, it would be tough to swallow that.
Strange time to be a golfer.
It's not a good time. All right, that's what's happening pretty much in the world of poker and sports betting across the world for you right now. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're joined by Fausto Valdez from Blueprint Poker Coaching, who's going to join us, talk a little bit about himself, talk a little bit about poker, talk about coaching, and tell you guys exactly what you need to do to improve your game. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Dustin the Great, country in the booth. The boss man is missing tonight. In fact, I do believe he is wheels up and headed to Atlanta, so he might not even be enjoying the show, unfortunately for him. But we wish him happy, safe travels. So we have a very special guest who's going to join us. Fausto Valdez, we have on the line right now. We're going to bring in one of the most extraordinary cash game players on the planet, has in fact reached that status through a short amount of time, has been very, very successful, and is also the founder of Blueprint Poker Coaching. Please welcome Fausto Valdez to the show. Hey, Fausto, how are you?
I'm good, Ali. That is an amazing intro. I love that intro.
Yeah, well, there you go. I aim to please, sir.
You earned it.
I wasn't
buddy.
Expecting that. I feel so special right now.
Yes, well, you earned it. Thank you so much for joining us. So there, you know, inquiring minds want to know about Fausto. I feel like, first of all, we got to give everybody a little bit of rundown of who you are. So people tend to get wrapped up in following tournament players because it's super easy, right? Like there's always somebody who's following the tournament circuit, who's somebody who's broadcasting, reporting in some capacity about what's happening in tournament play. But we always sit here and talk about the greatest players in the world are generally the players you never hear about because they're not playing tournaments. They're usually grinding cash games, and you happen to fall into that category and part of that criteria. So Fausto, tell us a little bit about your background, your history. Like, how did you come into poker? Where are you from? Give us a little rundown of your story.
Yeah, so you're definitely right about the tournament thing. Tournament is like the glamorous part. Cash is like the boring, everyday, mundane grind. But it is part of necessary for like the success. So like basically my background, it was just I was working the regular 9-to-5 job. I was working at a bank, and I was behind the cubicle. And if you could imagine sitting behind a cubicle 8+ hours a day, just trying to convince people to bring in more money wasn't the greatest thing. It was cool. It was like, it taught me a lot of life lessons because I did that at a young age, from 21 to 28. But then at some point I realized that I just didn't want to sit behind a cubicle for the rest of my life. And I've always loved poker and, played it like basically my whole life. And then I got reintroduced to it again. Via ex-girlfriend that brought me to a casino. It was like, hey, let's go play poker for your birthday. I was like, great. I never played at a live casino at that point. So we went. I won that day. Thank God. I was able to buy some, you know, food after that.
That's where it all started.
The story might have been totally different. We might have ended up on a way different road.
Right.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That probably is what started, you know, the spark. And then ever since then, like, I just, that fire got reignited behind me. And I was like, you know, I started studying again, and like the passion just came back. And I'm like, you know what? This is what I want to do. So I just went head first, started studying to the point that I felt comfortable enough to leave my job. I just took a chance and basically started my own business, which is me putting the faith and everything in me. And then just it's been like 5-6 years now, and I'm still here. So it's working out.
That's awesome. So let me ask you this. So going from transitioning from, and that's like, you know, having a job as a banker and deciding to become a poker player, they're similar in a lot of weird ways, right? Like you're handling money, you're having to manage finances, you're doing these types of banking type things. But there's a lot of stuff that I'm certain is very different, right? Like you probably don't do a lot of gambling as a banker. So that probably set a little, like maybe a few things that some obstacles you had to get around. But what was the criteria that you set for yourself in order to leave your position as an employed banker, you know, feeling nice and secure with your life and getting that weekly paycheck to saying, here's what it's going to take for me to take or make the transitional shift?
Not to lie to yourself. That's the biggest thing. Because with any business, you have to have the details down, like what's going to be your cash flow, what you expect your cash flow to be, what's your plan, what's your goal, how are you going to make it successful? Just like any business. It doesn't even have to be poker. It's just any business. You have a plan. And on top of that, who's the one running it? In this case, it's me, right? I have to be true to myself and not lie to myself that when days get hard, that I'm just going to run away. I have to buckle down, study, do what I have to do, be in the best mindset as possible. Strategically, I have to get the right resources, connect with the right people, all the good stuff to make sure I give myself the best chance. And that's all I really focus on, is just making sure I give myself the best chance. And I know myself. My work ethics is incredible. Like, I will not stop until I figure something out. Like, I would sit in front of the computer like 12 hours a day just studying. And I genuinely love that, you know. So, like, the biggest asset was, like, me, that I'm going to work my butt off, you know, and making sure that I give myself the best chance. And then whatever happens, happens.
I mean, I feel like it's, yeah, it sounds like just like starting a business. You have to say you're going to take a leap of faith. You're going to throw your hat in the ring, so to speak, and see what happens. And I'm certain that you probably set some parameters for yourself to say, when has this become too much? Was there like a stopping point, right? Like did you say, okay, I'm going to go into it with this mindset. I'm going to be diligent. I'm going to be committed. I'm going to do all of the things that I need to do. And at the same time, if this isn't working, what were the signs for you to say, this is the stopping point. I need to go back and reassess and try something again. Or did that even exist?
I don't think it existed. I just went into it. Yeah.
That's a great answer.
Yeah. I like at most, I knew that like if I lost my job and if I went broke and had no like income, that I don't know, I'll beg my brother to like go sleep in his room for like a few days until I figure it out. And worst comes to worst, like I had a big a good connection with like my previous employers, like you know, like I didn't burn any bridges. So like worst comes to worst, I could like thank them also, you know. So like, hey, you know, like you guys want a banker again, you know. So like I always felt like I had that back connection, the back of my mind, but like I just felt like I had to make it work. And you know, it's easy to say when things get tough. Funny enough, like I won my first session when I got reintroduced to it, but coming off starting professionally, I lost like the first 2 months. So I kind of tasted that in the beginning. I'm like, all right, we're going to have to do something about it.
Gotta take a step back and kind of look at things and go, whoa, did I really make the right decision here?
Yeah, yeah. And up until that point, like I was pretty winning. And I don't know, maybe a combination of like, you know, like being new to it, getting adjusted to it, you know, like making my own schedule, all that, being on top of it, actually keep studying and not get lazy. Like I you know, that's a learning curve in itself, even though I was doing part of that, but now it's like full time. Yeah. And you know, maybe I had a learning curve in the beginning, it just didn't work out, and I could have just been unlucky in the beginning, which happens, and I need to prepare for. So the first 2 months was not fun, but it worked out after that.
So I love that you have the mantra of there's no stopping point. Like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to make it. It's going to be successful. And that's the way it goes. And I love that. We had a question that came in on the chat that says a lot of people talk constantly about studying and how that's such a big, important piece of the game, especially if you're planning to step out and you're going to be disciplined. Part of your discipline is playing as a professional player is also continuing to study, right? Because the game is forever changing. And if you just think that you're going to study until you become a pro player and then stop studying at that point, you're up for a rude awakening. So talk a little bit about what it means. Explain what studying is to you and how you work through those steps.
Well, it would be the same advice I give everybody, is to be critically self-aware about mentally and strategically about the areas that are giving you trouble that you're not sure about, because your mind speaks to you. Like the moment you're in the flow and you're playing, you feel that nudge like, hey, I'm not sure about the situation, the spot. I don't even know what to think about here. Like those are all clues that your mind is telling you like, hey, I'm not sure about this. Everybody should write that spot down and jot it down on their notepad, book, phone, whatever, and create a list. That list is going to be your study resource or list. And then you should find the resources that will help you with that. Hence coaching, right? Or maybe it could be a website, or it could be a book or something that will help you in that particular area. And this could be mental or strategically, right? Because there's both aspects of the game. And it's important that there's a constant flow of that. It, you know, you don't have to bombard yourself with studying, and it's going to depend on what level you're at. The longer experience you have in the game and you've seen all the spots, the less studying you will need. But you will still need some form of studying. Like even my mentors, my previous coaches, like we've all changed like over the years. You know, like at one point we were thinking one thing in the short span of like maybe 2-3 years ago, and things have dramatically changed since then, you know. And on top of that, you get more efficient with your studying. You know what to look for. You know how to go about things a lot quicker. Because you're familiar with certain spots once you understand at its root core how this game works. And all that comes from studying. You know, the more you do it, the more familiar you get with spots, the faster and more efficient you get. So in conclusion, yes, it's important. You have to keep doing it. And I would say to everybody, be self-aware about the spots that are giving you trouble or you're confused about.
I like that. If you're just joining us, Fausto Valdez is on the line. He is from Blueprint Poker Coaching. He's talking a little bit about himself right now. We're going to get into sort of the learning aspect and the coaching pieces and what his teaching methods and how they differ from other people's in the next segment. But I want to keep talking a little bit about a little bit more with Fausto and kind of laying a little bit of a blueprint out for you guys so you can kind of understand his story. So Fausto, tell me a bit about how... So we transitioned from going from 9-to-5 job as a banker to deciding that we're going to play poker professionally and then starting to transition from that place into a spot where you feel like you want to be coaching or that you have something to offer. So talk a little bit about what those methods look like and what sets your training program aside from other people that have other, you know, information to offer or content.
Yeah, so... Yeah, so what happens in the poker industry, and this can be similar in other industries, that there's an abundance of information. And that gets really confusing, especially when you go to a point where, like, you know a lot, but you don't know how to put it down. And this happens constantly. And this happened to me, too, which is why I'm very intimate about this. So with that abundance of information, it gets cluttered in your mind. You need somebody to, like, guide you and organize it for you. And that's where coaching comes in. And there's many other coaches and, like, training sites that would teach you the same thing. But with coaching, when you get that one-on-one individual attention, the learning curve gets expedited really quickly. And me in particular, what I try to do is that I try to teach people how to think, not what to do in a particular spot, because in poker, there's so many moving variables and information that's not complete. That's what poker is. And you need to know how to think about the spot, what clues to look for, what variables to put together so you could come up with an answer with the best strategy possible. A lot of sites, a lot of training sites, and sometimes some coaches are guilty of this too, is that they just tell you, oh, when this happens, just do this. Mm-hmm. But it's not always black and white like that. You know, like there could be a lot of variables you need to put together. So basically, I try to teach you how to think about the spot, why spots exist as they do, and how to create a strategy out of that. You know, because you might be in an aggressive table, you might be in a passive table, it could be a mix, you might have some good or weaker players, and you need to know how to create a strategy, because the strategy is always moving.
No, I mean, that's all great and important information. And one of the things that, you know, that you're talking about as far as having so many variables involved in a situation is, you know, people can ask and they can say, hey, what do you do in this situation? And you're like, well, it depends, right? Like people right. always come with a poker question. And this is something that I tell that we constantly preach on the show is that you'll come with a question and it doesn't always have one deserving answer, first of all. Second of all, you know, everything is going to be like, what do you do with ace king in the spot? Well, it depends, right? It depends. Who's on your left? What's your position? Right. Like, what is, like, all of these constant changing variables or unknown variables, as we will call them, make a huge difference to all of those things. One of the things that I like about what you said, especially pertaining to the way that you coach, is you teach people how to think in certain situations as opposed to giving them answers. And I think that that's really great. And this kind of goes back to what I believe my core values of education as a whole, regardless of what it is, right? Like, you go to school to learn how to think. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. Let's be honest. We all have Google at the tip of our fingers. There is absolutely nothing that you can tell me that I can't read in a book or Google online. Nothing. There's nothing you can do, right? So the thing is to teach me how to be able to analyze the situation in a strategic fashion in ample amount of time with needing the fewest amount of resources as possible, right? And that's kind of what you're doing. You're teaching somebody how to think and how to get through their poker career or their poker education. And so I really love that approach. I think that it's a very holistic approach. I think it's a fantastic approach. And it also allows for growth in the game and in the industry too, right? Because if everybody's doing the same thing all the time, then poker is going to get really flat and boring. We're all reading the same book. Nothing changes. And pretty
the
soon
money,
the game
the money ends up in the rake slot.
Yeah, the money and all that, ends up in the wrong place, and that's not what we want. So yeah. We have to be creative and keep things moving and changing all of the time and make sure that we evolve as players and that our strategy and everything else continues to evolve with us. So I really love that approach. I have one more question for you, Fausto, before we take a break, and then we'll come back and talk some more about some other things. But correct me if I'm wrong, but you're living in LA, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, and you moved from the East Coast all the way to the West Coast. Yes?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and did you move there for poker reasons? Like, did you move there because of the industry and to play poker?
Pretty much. So at some point, you know, like I met a significant other. She's my girlfriend now. And I always told her from the beginning that, like, from New York, I had to travel. Like, I had to take a train and a bus to get to the nearest casino to avoid home games as much as possible. Not because they're crazy, but just because the way the structure is, they take too much money, not making it feasible for me to make a living. So I had to go to a casino, which in total, it took like 2 hours one way. And then it will be two to 3 hours coming back the other way. And I told her at some point, I'm like, I have to move. I love you, but I have to move. So you're either coming
you're
with
killing
me or
my
not.
Win rate.
I gotta go. I gotta go.
I gotta go. So at some point, she was able to like transition from her job, leave that job, get a new company, work for a new company on the West Coast. It was either going to be for the West Coast, so I just missed you guys by a few pairs. So it ended up being the West Coast. She got a job over there. I moved. Poker here is amazing. It is crazy. East Coast poker is good, but West Coast is unique in its own way.
West Coast is the best coast, baby. That's the way it goes.
it's pretty funny. Like, I have a strategy for the East Coast and the West Coast just because the tendencies from both players, the pool, reacts differently. And I have a few theoretical things as to why that is, but
I want to hear about that, but can we take a break and come back and talk about that? Because that was my follow-up question. I was going to ask you how you handle the players from one coast to the other coast. Cause I think that that's really interesting and very important. And it's great for our listeners too, because so many of our listeners travel and there's more travel involved in poker right now than there has been, you know, especially if you're into tournament play. But I think people would be curious to hear your take on players from the East Coast versus the West Coast and how you sort of tackle that. So if you don't mind hanging with us through the break, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, Fausto will join us again. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
The Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Dustin the Great, Country in the Booth. Unfortunately, the boss man is not with us tonight, but we are very fortunately joined by Fausto Valdez, who is coming back from the break with us. We've been talking with him about just sort of his upcoming in poker, where he's from, how he made it from the East Coast to the West Coast, his teaching methodologies, and just how he is a very well-rounded coach. He is the founder of Blueprint Poker Coaching. That's where you can find him. If you'd like to beef up your poker game, he is definitely a guy that can help get you to where you are looking to go. So prior to the break, we were talking about moving from the East Coast to the West Coast in search of greater poker. And it sounds like now residing in LA, Fausto has done just that. So, you know, we want to talk a little bit about how do you adapt your game? What do you suggest, if anything, in terms of when you're playing with players on the East Coast versus players on the West Coast? We know that this style and the type of game is vastly different. And styles, like the way people play and the way people study and what they recognize and see, I think is very different from coast to coast. So talk a little bit about how you adapt to that and what you recommend and where you found your most success from adapting from East Coast poker to West Coast poker.
Yeah, so East Coast poker, and also for what it's worth, there's a time gap difference from my first 3 years there to my next like 3 years in the West Coast. Mm-hmm. So strategies as a whole will evolve. But just in a general sense, the structure of the games are different, East Coast and West Coast. So on the East Coast, you have a thing called a rake, where they take a percentage of the pot to a max, which will influence how you play the game as a whole. Whereas the West Coast, they have what's called a drop, where they're taking a fixed amount, no matter what the size of the pot is, and they're taking that. So, for example,
they usually take that out of the blind, right?
They take that from the pot, yeah, and they take it from the blinds also. So, like, if everybody folds preflop, the one of the blinds, the small blind, is paying at least $2 preflop. Mm-hmm. And then when we get to the flop, they're taking a max of $7 total, no matter the size of the pot. It could be $7. They will wipe out the whole $7.
There's nothing left for tip.
Right, yeah. So on the East Coast, they'll take a percentage. So that could be $1, $2, $3, $4, or up to the $7. So it influences the game in the sense that pre-flop, before you see the flop, you could play more passive, basically. Whereas on the West Coast, because of the drop, you want to build up the pot and be more aggressive. And you're not incentivized to play passively where you just put $2, somebody else puts $2, and just wipe away the whole pot. It's not an incentive. It doesn't help anybody. So the game becomes more tighter and aggressive as a whole, which if we look at the game, in theory, if the game was played perfectly, it will be very tight and aggressive. And that's what you kind of see in the West Coast, where everybody plays this sort of tight and aggressive style, but they add that extra layer of aggressiveness because, I don't know, West Coast is the West Coast, and they don't care out here. They just go after it. And the East Coast, because it's the norm where you can play a little bit more passively, you get a lot of, like, multi-way action where you get, like, 6-7 players trying to sneak into the flop passively, which forces you to play, like, really, like boost up the raising much bigger pre-flop if you want to, like, get rid of some players, try to get a one-to-one. So it just gets very, like, crazy in that sense. So you have a lot of loose passiveness in the East Coast. West Coast, you have a lot of, like, tight and aggressiveness. Mm-hmm. And they require two different strategies, basically.
So here's what I find interesting about that. So we talk about that in the, you know, I always say that that's sort of attributed to the lag of poker reaching the East Coast and the capacity that it has.
Because
poker is so much more evolved on the West Coast because it's been there for so much longer, right? And so people are more familiar with it. It's been around. It's been more accessible, just as a general rule and as a whole. So the type of play is going to be a little bit different. I always feel like the West Coast is a little bit more advanced in style of play. So when you go and you're adjusting, right? So we're talking about adjusting from a loose passive game to a tight aggressive game. Like, what types of things do you recommend doing in each one of those spots? Like, give me a little bit of a rundown of how you would play each one of those optimally.
Right. And I'm going to bring it back before I dive into that and say, this is basically why I teach the way I teach. Basically the way I teach is a structured curriculum from beginning to end, pre-flop to flop, to help you understand theoretically how the game works. Mm-hmm. So in theory, the game should be tight and aggressive, which is how the West Coast is playing. So in that sense, when everybody's like sort of mimicking the same style, depending on the gradient scale from how tight to aggressive you want to be, you kind of want to do the counter. So you also want to involve yourself in a tight aggressive manner, because if you act passively, those same players are going to raise you, they're going to have the initiative, they're going to be demonstrating the strength and be able to put you in tough spots throughout. So you want to limit how many actions you enter passively, so you give yourself an advantage of entering with a tight strong range as well, just as they are also. But if they go too far in the tightness, you could be more aggressive, because then they're going to be overfolding in some aspects. And their actions become more predictable because they just have too tight of a range. So you kind of want to, like, enter with hands that are more playable to, like, stack them, basically. Mm-hmm. And with a loose passive style, their width of their range is just too weak as a whole. So basically you could attack them much more aggressively, isolate them much more often, and take those players that have too wide of a range, are consistently willing to see the flop, with a range that can't continue post. So you can put a lot of aggression versus them. And when you compare that to the West Coast, it's going to be a mix of that, where, like, you're entering the pot aggressively as well, but just much more concrete, more condensed, more refined. And you're going to have to do a little bit of mixing post flop. So your actions do generate action. If that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. So here's my question. Leading into all of that, do you feel like your game progressed substantially when you moved to the West Coast? And do you ever find yourself when you return to the East, or, I mean, I sort of, that's an assumption that you have been back to the East Coast to play. Do you feel like your game has that, like, it helped it to a point where when you come back and play some of the games on the East Coast, that you see some ways to take advantage of that style of play?
Yeah, for sure. So what happened was, in the East Coast, I was kind of like a lazy, loose, aggressive player, where, like, I had a overarching principle understanding of like certain spots. But when it comes to the details within that spot, so say there's a situation where I have to bet a lot because the board texture helps me, I have the initiative, etc. Everything is in my favor. I should be aggressive. I understand that holistically. But within that spot, there's a finesse to it. Maybe you have to be aggressive up to like 70% of your range as a whole, maybe 80%. But I was doing it maybe to like at 100 or 90, mm-hmm. where like I'm pushing it, but I'm pushing it way too far, right? Mm-hmm. So it's okay to a degree. Now, in the West Coast, if you do that, you're just going to get destroyed because those imbalances in your actions get shown and you get attacked really easily because their strategy as a whole is already tight and aggressive. So they're already coming in with a condensed range that could play back at you much more easily. Mm-hmm. So I was approaching in the same way, and those spots were showing. Like post-flop, I would get into messy spots because I wasn't as refined. I understood the spot holistically, but I wasn't refined. And then I was forced to be refined, basically. So this coming back to being self-aware, right? It's like, okay, I'm having trouble in the spot. I'm doing okay, but not great. I'm sort of break even, slightly winning. You know, I could still buy ramen noodles. I might just not buy the whole pack, but I could buy one pack, right?
Right.
So something has to change. So I went to the studying, did my thing, came back a new monster. And now it's like, okay, I am much more refined now. Not only do I understand the spot holistically, now I know the details within the spot and I know the frequencies, which hands to take, which hands to check raise, which hands should be aggressive, which hands to check all that stuff. Now I'm much more refined, much more detailed within the holistic spot.
I love that. Fausto Valdez from Blueprint Poker Coaching is on the line with us right now, talking some poker theory, especially in terms of moving from the East Coast to the West Coast, or from playing a loose passive game to a tight aggressive game.
Yep.
And kind of how those things go hand in hand. Learning the learning curves of moving from coast to coast, understanding that you're playing with different styles of players. And that's going to be the case no matter where you go. I feel like you even see some of that happen from city to city, right?
Sometimes you see it from table to table.
From table to table. Yeah. I think you see a bigger stretch, and I was going to use one of your places that you like to play, either New Orleans or Biloxi type area. Playing poker there is so much different than playing poker here, just as a whole. Regardless of any table that you sit at, it is vastly different than any table that you would sit at if you came and played at any of the best bet. I mean, you might find like one random game, but it's pretty...
Sure.
It's very different, right? And so I think that... I feel like you have an advantage if you're a West Coast player coming to the East Coast, and you're almost at a slight disadvantage if you're going the other direction. And the way to probably combat that would be to, do as Fausto says, learn to think, hit him up on Blueprint Poker Coaching, because he obviously knows the difference between those two styles of play in areas of the country and has mastered both of them, right? To a point that's really great.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this question. As we talked earlier in the show, we talk about you being a cash player and not so much a tournament player. Do you dabble in tournaments at all? Do you coach in tournaments, or do you strictly coach in cash? What does that look like if somebody is seeking your expertise?
So for now, I strictly coach cash, and I do dabble in tournaments. I have like studying like with my mentors, like they're really good at tournaments too. So like I get their advice and I learn from them. So I do have a strategy for tournaments. It's completely different from cash games. I do not look like the same person. In tournaments, I'm what you call a nit. I'm very tight.
I can't imagine what that guy would look like in your body, just playing really tight.
It's not the same, man. Yeah. I have my hat backwards, sunglasses. Like it's completely different. And it's because the incentives are different, right? Like, so in cash games, there's no big prize pool at the end, right? Like, your money comes from generating action. You have to give the people a reason for them to feel like they want to give you action. That's how you make money in cash. In tournaments, none of that matters. You just have to survive to the final table where all the money is at. So whether that means you being aggressive or tight, do whatever is necessary to survive to get there. There's no survivalism in cash games. You have to be in the mix. If you're not in the mix, you will be face up, predictable. There's no reason for anybody to give you action. You're still going to have people that can't help themselves and give you action if you're a tight player. But
story of my life.
Once you, but once once you start playing like the savvier players, or even like the average Joe, like aggressive player, like they'll pick up on the at some point that like, hey, you're not doing anything. You just been sitting there for 5 hours, like waiting for aces. Like that's not gonna get you action. So you have to generate it, and that's why I love cash in that sense. Like it's very multifaceted. Like it's a lot of moving parts. Tournaments has like their own world, but cash is more consistent. I love it. It's there available anytime, and I don't have to travel. You know, tournaments you got to travel everywhere.
Yeah, that's a solid point too. I like that. I mean, it's definitely true that if you are a tournament player, you spend more time traveling. It's yeah, it's interesting. It's sort of like if you're playing sports and you play competitively, you travel around and play other teams. But if you play sports and you just play recreationally, you kind of stay in your own hometown area. It's sort of like one over the other. It's kind of the same type of thing where you stick around. I imagine that you run across a ton of players in LA that are new players. What does it look like in terms of finding tourists, right? Because that's a big piece. Picking off the tourists, or do you guys mostly just play with all your reg players that are there in LA?
So this is like, this is my thing. Like that, I think the notion of picking on the tourists is kind of like overblown, and that's probably a Vegas thing. Whereas in California, like there's so many games everywhere, and the way the ecosystem works here, because of what I mentioned before, everybody's like crazy and aggressive in their own sense. Like everybody, like the majority of players are very sticky. And the other like 25% are like aggressive in some form or fashion. So like all the games are good. I don't have to like be nitpicky and all this stuff. Like I just pick a casino and go. Like it's going to be a good game. Where in Vegas, that's not the case. And I think it's because of poker involved. Like the destination of big games poker was Vegas. So like everybody goes there. You have all the good players. And the game is very just like even more tight and aggressive, right? Even more so than the version I was giving you earlier. And the games, at least in my experience, are very dependent on the season, right? So like March Madness is great. All the tourists are there. The World Series of Poker, when everybody's in town, the games are great. But it's seasonal over there. In California, West Coast, is just pick a casino. Just go. You're going to be fine.
I love that.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, I have to say I'm super happy, Fausto, that you joined us tonight, and I'm so happy to hear you say that. I feel like we've been talking as kind of the pandemic is winding down and people are starting to come out of their shells and how poker's so incredible no matter where you go. I'm certain it's exceptional in L.A. L.A. has always been the home of some of the greatest poker games on the planet, not just now, but it's always been that way. And we're so happy that you joined us. So Fausto Valdez, again, with Blueprint Poker Coaching. He is going to join us here live in the next couple weeks. 2 weeks, is it? So in about two weeks
we're
going to have, we're going to have you on the show. You're going to join us here. You'll be in Jacksonville. You'll get to see some East Coast, Southeast Coast poker games, and we'll get you on the live stream and we'll see what that looks like. But again, for anybody who's interested, Blueprint Poker Coaching is where you can find Fausto, and he's going to be fantastic. We're going to make sure that when we bring him on in a couple weeks, he's going to have an awesome segment to pull apart a very specific topic. So I'm going to give him a job. I know you didn't know that coming on the show today.
Surprise.
But now you leave with a job, which always makes me happy. So I'm delegating. We're looking forward to that show and it's going to be great. Again, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you. Thank you. It was really fun.
We look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk all things promotions and put a wrap on the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDill here with Dustin the Great, wrapping up the program. Okay, as mentioned before, there are tons and tons of things going on. Not only are there tournaments coming up, we've got the Card Player Poker Tour, which is kicking off here in mid-June. What is it, June 17th or 18th?
Yeah, a week from tomorrow.
A week from tomorrow. So June 17th kicks off event number one of the Card Player Poker Tour. There are 12 total events. The main event featuring a $2,500 main event, which will take place, kicks off 25, is that right?
Yeah.
25, 26, 25th is the first day. So there is a mega this Friday over in Jacksonville, $380. You can play on Friday at
7 p.m.
7 p.m. Sorry, it was like it was 7:30. So 7 o'clock p.m. on Friday, $380 mega into the $2,500 card player main event.
That's trying to get a million in the prize pool.
That's definitely a place you want to be. There's $400 high hands in Jacksonville today and $500 high hands throughout the entire weekend. Go to bestbetjacks.com for more information. That's going to do it for us tonight. But don't go anywhere. The Sports Den is coming up next. For Dustin the Great and Country, I'm Allie McDeal saying, until next time, we hope to see you at the final table.